Chirodites, how you doing? My name is Jonathan Ware. Happy to be joining you this evening. I got a text message after our last segment about Target banning or getting rid of some LGBTQ stuff, including things with portrayals of the devil, like a cartoonish little goofy devil on there. And I said, if you're going to get rid of that, then get rid of, quote, Red Devil vacuums. Got a text that said, it's Dirt Devil, you idiot. But you're right. I got that wrong. I don't think that it matters that I got it wrong, because the part that matters is the devil. But you're right. And I do like to correct myself when I'm so obviously wrong. There is no Red Devil vacuum as far as I know. It's just Dirt Devil. But, you know, I want to say one last thing about the whole Target issue. It's your right-wing activists going after Target for having Pride Month clothing because this is wrong and our children shouldn't be exposed to this and it's groovy, blah, 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 blah. I just find it tiresome to be preached to by people who have absolutely no problem with bumper stickers that say Joe Biden and you for voting for him. I'm just, if you don't have a problem with that, then shut up about a rainbow on a t-shirt at Target. Moving on. Here's some good news for people who regret having kids. So if you have kids, you're like, ah, darn it. Got to protect them from the devil depictions and all of the unicorns on t-shirts. Oh my God, all the things that they could be exposed to. Well, here's something to make you feel better. You can use your kids to make yourself young. At least that's what this millionaire is doing. He is taking his kid's blood and putting it inside of his body in an effort to live forever. In April, he visited the Resurgence Wellness and Futuristic Looking Medical Spa in Arlington, Texas, the Talmage, whatever. He got a liter of blood removed, about a fifth of the blood in his entire body, and separated it into parts before the plasma was reinfused into his father. It's Brian Johnson is the name of this millionaire. His son is named Talmage, but might as well. I think Talmage actually is Sanskrit for blood bag. I might be wrong about that. I might be wrong. By the way, they're white guys. Brian Johnson then donated a liter of blood products to his 70-year-old father, and no one donated blood back to the 17-year-old, because why would he want some dusty old blood? By the way, his father's in his 40s. I don't know how he pitched the idea to his son, but apparently his son was willing to do it. I mean, I have a 14-year-old. I think he'd be like, yeah, Dad, I'll give you some of my blood for a price. It's going to cost you. Nowadays, this guy is better known for spending at least $2 million a year chasing the Fountain of Youth. So basically, that's what this guy's doing. His name is Brian Johnson. He's a millionaire, and he's trying to live forever by sucking blood out of his son and putting it into himself. I mean, I know technically there's more scientific terms for transfusion than that, but that's basically what this is. I just have to say, whatever happened to just aging gracefully? Can we not do that anymore? Either you have to dress like a teenager still, steal the blood of teenagers and put it in yourself, get tons of Botox, get facelifts to the point where you have a knot of skin at the back of your head that they just shove a wrench into and then tighten it to make you look a little bit younger.
That's cool. Sounds good.
What happened to just be like, you know what? I'm getting older. I got some gray hairs. I don't really care.
Ask Nicole
I think it
Kidman.
Looks dignified.
I don't know.
That's a great point. Nobody in Hollywood's doing it. But to be fair to the people in Hollywood, they lose their jobs if they don't look good. I mean, I'm not excusing it necessarily because it's the whole societal thing. But don't take that up with the people of Hollywood. Take that up with our standards. This guy, Brian Johnson, is 45. And he's obviously terrified of death. He wants to live forever.
I hope you know that I'm titling the hour of this podcast when it goes up, Vampire Dad Chases Fountain of Youth.
Love it. Love it. That is on point. I don't understand. Like, I hope as I get older, I fear death less. I have a little bit of fear of death, but it's better now than it was like 10 years ago. And I assume by the time I'm in my 50s, it'll be even less. And hopefully, I don't ever get the urge to become a vampire and steal young blood. And it'll be hilarious, by the way, when we do finally conquer death, when like the guy at Harvard who's working on it with mice and he's reversed the ages of mice. Look that up. His name is David Sinclair. He's doing wonderful, miraculous things. When we finally do conquer death, it's going to be amazing, the conversation between this dad and this kid. It's like, so remind me again, Dad, why did you need me to put 3 pints into a bag that you greedily ingested into your own body?
Can you imagine a sleepover at this guy's house? Like, hold on, Timmy, I'm going to go downstairs. My dad's going to suck my blood now.
No, it would. The sleepover would be, hey, Timmy, so you go to sleep, and if you notice a phlebotomist coming in and shoving a needle into your arm in the middle of the night, that's just something we do here. That's just something. Do you want my dad to not live forever? Because he needs it. He needs your blood, Timmy. It's just creepy. Speaking of aging, there's a list on Psychology Today of 7 signs that you may be having a 3/4 life crisis. So we have the quarter life crisis, which is, by their estimation, I guess if between 25 and 30, you have a crisis there, like, oh, what am I doing with my life? And then the midlife crisis, which is between, what, like, I guess 45 and 55 or so. But this is the 3/4 life crisis, which hits people between 60 and 65 or so.
So you should be having it soon then.
I've been having a life crisis. That isn't what I really do wonder about that. Like, people are like, oh, the midlife crisis, quarter life crisis, 3/4 of life crisis. Like, are you people not constantly terrified that you're not making any kind of impression in this world? Are you seriously just like most of the time happy? That's crazy to me. I'm just constantly having a crisis. But there was a survey of more than 5,000 people, and it found that a third experienced a 3/4 life transition or crisis. They reported feeling remorse, boredom, discouragement, and they questioned their legacies. Here are some things that they had pervasive feelings of. And if you have these, then you might be having a 3/4 life crisis. You might have pessimism about the future. Nailed it. Got it. Yep. Put it in the back. You might have apathy. I wish I had apathy. Not caring about stuff seems awesome. Unfortunately, you people keep pissing me off. And I just can't stop caring. Then you have regret, which, I don't actually, believe it or not, have a lot of that. It's kind of like, if I screw up, I screw up. If I do my best. I usually, whenever I have failures, I just blame the world at large. Resentment, irritability, or bitterness, got that. Uncertainty about one's priorities, got that. Disillusionment, constantly. Emptiness, grief, or loneliness. It's why we drink, people. It's why we drink. So, I don't know. That is a list of things that many of us might be feeling all the time anyway, and you don't have to have a 3/4 life crisis to have. But this is bad news for younger people, because I think most of us assume when we're older, we'll be over this crap. But apparently it sticks with you. Apparently, it's never going away, and you'll just never be happy. That's great. Maybe it's just this. Maybe if you're older, you have more time to think about this stuff. You have more time to dwell. I feel like there's probably some truth to that. This is why, like, I can't enjoy vacations. Because anytime I have, like, nothing to do, then my brain just turns on itself. I become my own worst enemy. Most people go on vacation. They go somewhere nice and just try to relax. I can't do that. When I've been laid off or in between jobs, I go crazy. I need something to distract me. Not that it matters what's going to happen in my future or any of our futures, because guess what? The AI, it's coming for us. Robotic beings rule the world. The humans are dead. A little segment that we do. The humans are dead. Occasionally on the show to highlight just how doomed we are. And we poison their asses. Thanks to artificial intelligence being adopted, well, just nearly everywhere. First story there is Microsoft is going to make you use AI whether you like it or not. They're going to integrate ChatGPT-like systems, one of which is called Windows Copilot, into all of their PC apps. Every single one. Copilot will be available for Windows 11 as a preview in June. Windows Copilot will be the user's personal assistant. The company announced during the Microsoft Build conference that runs until Thursday, quote, "We are bringing the Copilot to the biggest canvas of all, Windows," said Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella. "This is going to make every user a power user of Windows." So it's like this thing that'll be in the taskbar, and then it'll be in like Word or Excel, all of your, you know, Microsoft Office apps, all that stuff. In Teams, it'll be there. So I just want to be clear about this. Microsoft reinvented Clippy. That's what they invented, a little assistant that's going to annoy the crap out of you while you're trying to use their apps. Cool. Good job. Congratulations. Next story, and the humans are dead. The University of Texas in Austin is trying to read minds using AI. How are they doing this? Well, apparently they sit you in an MRI machine and they measure your blood flow, and then they have some AI learning model interpret the blood flow and try to figure out your thoughts. And the way they're specifically doing this is they have you listen to an audiobook, and it'll be like, I don't know, say it's like Tale of Two Cities. So it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. So you're hearing that, so that's the thought that you should be having in your head. But then the AI tries to pick up what you heard, how you interpreted, and all that stuff. So it'll, in the demonstration I saw, it says on one side, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. But then on the right, it'll be like, times were good, but sometimes not so good. So it's actually working, according to them. It is doing its job. Let me ask you something. Would you want this? At all? Because they're like, oh, we'll be able to use this. People might be able to read minds. It'll be able to take your thoughts if you're somebody with like locked-in syndrome. And you can express yourself now. Which, they already have that. I mean, Stephen Hawking had that. They have the way of typing using their eyes. I mean, that works already. Why do they need something? And by the way, why would you want something that just interprets your thoughts immediately with no control over them by you? So everything you think is up for everybody to see? That'd be terrifying. They claim it's never going to get to the point where you can just walk down the street and be able to read people's minds. But I don't believe. I don't believe that's not their goal. I just don't. Next two stories are kind of combined. Elon Musk says he's super worried about AI. In an interview, he was talking about how it can really displace people. It's going to be not a Skynet type of thing, but there's going to be a lot of jobs lost, et cetera, et cetera. But then he went on to say, yeah, but, you know, I'm going to be using it. I'm going to have Tesla exploring it. We definitely are going to be using AI. Because I don't know if you know this about Elon Musk. He never has once invented anything in his life. He just takes something that somebody else invented and then claims that he invented it or that he's responsible for it. But he says that we need regulations on AI, which is cool that he wants regulations on AI. And then the CEO of Google met with leaders in the EU, and they decided also, you know what we need? We need regulations on AI. We need transparency. We need regulations. We need to make sure that this doesn't get out of hand. The EU was saying this to the CEO of Google, and the guy with Google agreed. We need regulations. And I've mentioned this before in this segment when we've talked about it. It's weird that these guys keep going to Congress or keep going to the EU or going wherever they're going to governmental bodies and saying things like, hey, we need regulations. Please stop us. And it just dawned on me today why they're doing it. And this is a very cynical take, but stick with me. They want regulations on AI to make sure that only rich companies can make AI. Because guess what will happen? Once it's regulated, Google can afford the fines. Tesla can afford the fines. They don't care if they get $5 million, $500 million. If they're making billions and billions off of AI every year, what do they care if they get fined? This is just to make sure that, you know, old Pappy's grand old-fashioned AI company, some startup, can't get going with AI because they can't afford the regulations. That's all they're doing. I know it's a cynical take, but tell me that doesn't make more sense than these people actually want governmental regulations.
Once again, without emotion, the humans are dead, 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 dead.
Hey, sexy mama.
Want to kill all humans?
Same. But I will end this segment by saying, once again, guys, AI isn't. It's not there yet. It's not that sophisticated. It's not going to be able to read our minds. It might be displacing some jobs, but the real danger of AI is not that it is so good. The danger of AI is that people think it's good enough. So we have a bunch of television writers on strike. Well, let's replace them with AI. And then we'll all sit around 5 years from now going, why does television suck so bad now? All this dialogue seems so inauthentic. Remember when the girl said to the guy, like, hey, I want you to put your VGA port into my...
Calm down.
Okay, all right. I was trying to think of robot sex talk. All right, coming up, we're going to do music news with Kevin. Big news today, obviously, the passing of Tina Turner. It's coming up next on Cairo Nights. Cairo Nights, how you doing? My name's Jonathan Weir. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Okay, before we get to the Tina Turner thing and the music news, I just want to say real quick, just to address something that was in the news just now, because I just think it's funny. They said that one of the ways to live longer is not breathing as much or holding your breath. Whatever. It was at Massachusetts. It was found, I can't remember where they said, University of Massachusetts or something. UMass, maybe. There's also the guy at Harvard in Boston that's working on living forever. And here's what I find ironic about that. I've lived in Massachusetts for 4.5 years now. I don't know anybody here who's enjoying it. I don't know anybody here who's like, hey, I hope this goes on longer. I really want more out of this. Anyway, how you doing, Kevin?
Doing better than you, apparently.
I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
We got some sad news today, obviously, the passing of Tina Turner.
Absolutely. So that is the music news, obviously. You know, we kind of led off with that, but the music news is obviously the icon, the queen of rock and roll. Tina Turner's passed away today after a battle with cancer. And, you know, there were so many celebrity and musician, you know, kind of tributes. And of course, you know, she was good friends with Mick Jagger from Rolling Stones. So Mick Jagger went to Instagram and he said, I'm so saddened by the passing of my wonderful friend, Tina Turner. She was truly an enormously talented performer and singer. She was inspiring, warm, funny, and generous. She helped me with so much when I was young and I will never forget her. I really enjoyed what Alicia Keys said. Alicia Keys actually is coming to town here in Seattle soon. So she mentioned that, what a woman, what a life, what a warrior. The day I met you, Miss Tina, I couldn't believe I was standing in the presence of your greatness. Thanks to my big sis, Oprah, I got to celebrate and thank you for all the love you've poured out around you. The songs you sang gave us courage to step out and be our full selves. You are a fierce force as a woman and a performer. All of these things have been beacons of light for not only me, but all the people around the world finding ourselves in our fearlessness through our vulnerability. Thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of our hearts, beautiful big sister. Rest well. We love you and adore you infinitely. And I think that Alicia Keys had great things to say, and I think she put it best. So I just wanted to quickly mention that, you know, we're not breaking any news here, but it is important to, you know, kind of just remember Tina Turner. She was an icon, and she really was like the embodiment of fierce, independent women who have gone through so much and have, you know, you kind of mentioned it in the beginning of the show of how much, you know, she went through publicly, and then just like the second life of her career was even more triumphant than her first. So,
and really, I think that is when you look at the way her life played out, it doesn't always work out this way, but it worked out perfectly for someone who is in an abusive relationship and doesn't think that they'll be half the person that they are. Because when you're in an abusive relationship like she was, it's hard to walk away from, because that person, in a Stockholm syndrome kind of way, has convinced you that you, without them, are worthless. And Tina got tired of hearing that, got tired of hearing, you know, take the late train back to Nutbush Ellie Mae, even though her name was Anna Mae. She got tired of it and eventually left Ike and started her own career. And I would say it's not even controversial. I would say it's not even a debate that she had a much bigger solo career in her 40s and 50s than she did as Ike's co-writer and the second to him in Ike and Tina's review. So I mean, it really is like she did not consider her life to be a fairy tale or anything like that. And certainly it isn't if you get into the gritty, horrifying details of some of the things that have happened to her. By the way, it wasn't just Ike that was an abusive person to her. It was pretty much everybody in her life for years and years. But the arc of her life makes for a very, very powerful story, and one that is well worth telling. And I'm glad that not only is there a great movie like What's Love Got to Do with It, but there's also the Tina documentary that you can watch, which is very good. And very well done. I mentioned this earlier because it's something that made me sad that I read. And this was actually something that I just read today. It was a quote from her that was upsetting. And it says, she said, "I didn't have a good life. The good did not balance the bad. I had an abusive life. There's no other way to tell the story. It's a reality. It's a truth. That's what you've got. So you have to accept it." And I've been spinning that in my head today, thinking about what that means for the rest of us. Because Tina Turner sold out the biggest concert of all time in Rio de Janeiro. She had 180,000 people show up. It was the biggest crowd for a solo performer of all time. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records. Absolutely amazing. People chanting her name, people singing along to her songs, just showing her nothing but adulation and love. And yet she says at the end of her life, it wasn't a good life. The good didn't balance out the bad. And I think that's just a lesson to many of us, and especially our children, who might be firing off TikToks or going on YouTube and trying to get clout and trying to get fame and success. That doesn't solve your problems. Sometimes it only makes them worse. And I think genuinely, one of the reasons it does make your problems worse is because you tell yourself, once I get there, I'll be happy. Once I get $1 million, I'll be happy. Well, you're not happy. Now you, okay, fine. Once I get $10 million, I'll be happy. Still don't get it. Once I have people chanting my name and singing my songs, I'll be happy. Then you get it and you're still not happy. We've seen that with so many musicians and rock stars and actors and comedians. Just, it's not enough. It's never enough. And she was just trying to say that. It's not enough. It doesn't make up for all the horrible crap that happened to me. I mean, I can, in a very slight way, kind of understand where she's coming from with that. Being in radio, I told myself forever and ever, once I'm number one, once I have, like, great ratings, I'll be happy. Well, I had them.
Yeah, how'd that go for you?
I got fired. It didn't make any difference in my bosses because I cost too much to keep at that point. And I, by the way, it wasn't even that I was miserable because I got laid off. I got number one and I was like, oh no. Then I was terrified of not having those ratings anymore. It made it so much harder to do my job. And I think that's part of the problem with being a performer. You get the success and then you're more terrified of losing it than you are of maintaining it. Anyway, RIP Tina Turner. She was an absolutely wonderful person and an amazing performer, one of the greatest voices in rock and roll of all time. It's Cairo Nights. You'll never know how it feels to be the one who's left behind. Cairo Nights. How you doing? My name's Jonathan Weir. So delighted to be with you this evening. Thanks for joining us. I saw this earlier and I just thought it was fascinating. We were talking about how important it is to be number one, and then when you get to number one, you're still miserable. Happens to a lot of people. It's lonely at the top. Heavy is the head, all that stuff, right? So I looked up the top websites in the world. Which websites get the most traffic? So we're going to play a little game. Kevin, I'm going to ask you who you think, like, number one is. Hmm? And then we'll see how long people spend on that website, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so what do you think the number one website in the world is?
In the world? Google?
In the world.
Google.com.
That is correct. It is Google.com by a fair margin, by the way. What do you think the average duration of visit is there? So if you're on Google, how long are you spending there?
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
No, 1 minute.
It's 10 minutes on average. Really? Is how long somebody spends on Google.com. I guess they can't find their search results quick enough. Yeah. I have no idea because my goal, and that's a thing with Google too, when you think about it. Your goal with Google is to get away from Google as quickly as possible. If Google does its job right, you're nowhere near Google within 20 or 30 seconds.
I'm more of an Ask All right, Jeeves kind of guy.
All right, how long do you think people spend on the number two website in the world, YouTube?
Oh, 20 minutes.
Nailed it.
Nice.
20 minutes and 33 seconds, to be precise.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. I'm not going to do the duration thing necessarily for all these, but the number three website in the world is, what do you think?
Porn website.
You think it's a porn website?
Yeah.
maybe some people might find it to be porn, outrage porn. It's Facebook. That's number three. Number four is, oops, I accidentally clicked on Facebook. Oh, that's disturbing. Number four is Twitter, which I find surprising because I know that actually Twitter has very few users, but I'm guessing the people that go on Twitter just stay there for a while. Then Instagram.com is number five, which is weird because...
Yeah, nobody goes to Instagram.com.
Right. It's an app mostly. It's the same thing. TikTok is on here as well.
I was thinking Amazon.com would be up there.
And number 15 is TikTok. But have you ever gone to the TikTok website?
TikTok.com? What?
Doesn't work at all. All right. Now I want you to just throw out websites at me and I'll tell you where they're at on this.
Amazon.com.
Amazon.com. You'd think it'd be higher than it is. It's 14th.
Okay.
And people spend an average of 7 minutes and 6 seconds on Amazon.com before they realize, you know what, I should just go and support a local business and go do it there. I can read your thoughts, and I know you're asking this. Pornhub.com. They're 12th.
Okay.
Number 12, which do you think that's higher or lower than you would expect?
No comment.
I honestly thought it would be higher. The average duration of visit on Pornhub.com is 7 minutes and 44 seconds, which is 7 minutes longer than most of us need, but, you know, to each his own. The number 13 website is also another website that says it's adult. I've never heard of it before. It's called XNXX. Give me some other websites to look up.
Some more websites to look up?
Yeah. What's another website that you think should be in the top websites of all time, according to
SimilarWeb.com? I don't know.
What was it?
ESPN.com. I don't know.
ESPN.com.
Yeah. Is that? I don't know.
ESPN. Oop. That sound means it's not in the top 50.
Okay.
Yeah. Where do you think Yahoo's at?
25.
Ninth.
Whoa.
Yahoo is ninth, which is surprising because it's like a joke website, right? Like,
yeah.
People are like, you end up like Yahoo, the Hydrox of websites, of search engines. It's ninth. They're doing fine. They're doing fantastic. In fact, the average length of visit on Yahoo is 8 minutes and 9 seconds, which should tell you it's a better search engine than Google because you find your stuff quicker.
Metacrawler. X-Hamster.
What, web crawler?
Yeah, Metacrawler.
How about Angel Fire? I don't see that on here. MSN? Wow, that's one I haven't been on.
Hotmail.com.
Hotmails.com?
M-A-L-E, yep.
Oh, sorry, that's not on here. The Weather Channel is 34th, but people, that has the lowest average visit at only 52 seconds. Interesting. See the weather and then I'm done. Don't need any more information from this website. They just need to hide it a little better, you know? Car nights.